questions for Ed.
Speak loudly
when you ask the question.
All right, David.
Yeah, Ephesians 6:4, and you fathers raise your children. So thank you for giving the world Hillary Clinton, who told us that it takes a village to raise a child. But the Apostle Paul says that you fathers raise your children. So I know that you have... And I would be more inclined, obviously, to agree with what you you're saying. However, and I run into this situation myself. There will be I have six grandchildren and one on the way. And although generally speaking, my children would have the same philosophy that I have, there are some differences. And when I see those differences, I've made it my practice to keep my mouth shut and to realize that God, in his sovereignty and in his providence, has given those children a different father, and that father is not me. And if asked, I will gladly give an opinion, but it is the job of their parents to raise them. I don't mean to be trite in saying this, but you certainly, I'm sure, do pray for your grandchildren, and that's a very important thing. But at least I found that when we were raising our children, and my mother would chime in. Remember, I told you last night that I was the worst child that ever lived. Like there's probably a reason for that. I was just bad, but I was like bad and unchecked. And so when my mother saw us disciplining our children, as I myself was not disciplined, she said, and she frequently would give her opinion on what she thought we were doing wrong. She was looser, we were more strict, but nevertheless, the principle is the same. I really didn't want my mother raising our children. I didn't even really want her opinion on the matter, and part of that might have been pride, and part of that might have been just that she was wrong, and I was biblically convinced that discipline needed to happen. But I think that it's their job to do it, and if you're asked in a very gracious way, render an opinion and have a chapter and verse to support your point. But I think... if you take it upon yourself to express that you are discontent with the way that your children are raising their children, I don't think it's going to go well. Pastor, would you disagree with me? Okay, it's a tough question. Yeah, thank you.
I'm Christian Dennett. My question is, obviously as fathers, we are called to provide for our families and our children, for who doesn't work, doesn't eat, right? But also we're guided by Deuteronomy 6:4. It says every moment of every day we're called to parent our children. Your point four here is to use the precious time with strategic urgency in order to minimize regrets. I think oftentimes when we're men that go out and work and provide, we feel that tension very much, especially if we want to be obedient and raise our children according to the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I think sometimes we talk ourselves into saying that quality time is more important than quantity of time, and we make us that excuse for ourselves. Would you agree with that, or do you think that quantity is as important as quality of time?
I think that the cliche, quality time is more important than quantity time, is a really good use of alliteration, and I think it ends right there. I honestly don't know the difference, because the kid is not saying to himself, this is really an important time, and I realize that my father has sacrificed right now, and that he is now really trying to put something really important to me. I think the Deuteronomy 6 thing of when you rise up and when you lay down, you're talking about these things and you're doing them all along. I think that any time is quality time. That you make most use of the time, as Paul says in Colossians and Ephesians. But no, I don't agree with that. As any time that you can do that, I think you should take advantage of it. I think that maybe what dads don't do enough is that they are not creative enough with it, and they don't think enough to try to kill two birds with one stone. If you're going to the supermarket, why are you going by yourself? Stick a kid in the car. You can have a 4.5-minute conversation with the kid, which is better than not having the 4.5-minute conversation with the kid. Way too much television, way too much just letting the kid be on their phone. And time's just evaporating when they're detached from you. The other thing I think, and I think you know this, that society has changed so much that for hundreds and maybe even thousands of years, whatever a dad did, that's what his sons did. And so the dad was with the son, training the son, and now we are so detached from one another. And it's so much harder for us in New York, because we have dads who, in order to feed their family, are doing a 3-hour commute, and they only live 10 miles from where they work. But they get up in the morning, and they walk to the bus stop, and then they take the bus to the train, and then they are in the train 45 minutes, and then they have another 15-minute walk to wherever they're working in Manhattan, and then they shuffle out of the rat race. And so now they've invested 3 hours of their day just getting to and from work. They haven't made any money during that time, and they're not with their kids. And then they go home, and they're really tired, and they watch a lot of television. And like before you know it, there's just no time that has been spent with the kids. And so what I would say is that we really should be working to be creative when we do have a few precious moments to get that television turned off and to throw the kid in the car with you and to take them with you. But quality, quantity, I don't really see the value of that cliche.
Thank you.
Thank you. Christian, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hey, my name's Bronson Stillwell. I'm a grandfather of 7 biological children and really quite a few more that I've unofficially adopted. And so I'd like to go back to what you said to David. I think there's some important things that maybe you don't even want to cover because you're addressing just fathers, but the adopted grandchildren I have, some of them have good fathers and some of them are fatherless, and I'm involved in helping to raise them. And I sort of think that the church should be helping people raise their children. I know you're focusing just on the father, but when David said he has a different style, he does. And I don't think he can actually discipline his grandchildren the way their parents do, but I think his influence on them is something that God wants to have, and I think he made David the way he made David, and so David's influence on his grandchildren is very important, and I don't want that to seem belittled by your focus on just letting the fathers father their children, because I really think a really important thing is for the whole church to pray for and love children, and we have a children's ministry where I get to be involved with the children of that are not mine at all, not mm-hmm. even sort of unofficially mine. So I'd like you to make at least a comment about that, if it won't take you too far from your agenda.
No, great point. And I would agree with you that grandparents have an influence on their grandchildren. Paul writes to Timothy, and he says, you have a really good foundation here with Lois and Eunice, your grandmother and your mother. So I do everything I can to pray with and to teach and to love and to give direction to my grandchildren. And we also have a children's ministry in our church. And every Tuesday for the past 20 years, I have an after-school class in my office with the elementary school students that are in the church. And we have a youth group. And we have a children's ministry called the Carpenter Shop, and we have children's church. So I agree that there are ways. I hope you didn't hear me saying that the church shouldn't be involved in helping to give the word of God to the children. So thank you so much for clarifying that. The one thing that I was trying to say was, with respect to the subject of discipline, when a grandfather disagrees with the mother or the father, say there's no father there, the mother, I don't think that the grandfather has the right to come into the home and to say to his son or daughter, I don't like the way that you are disciplining your children, and we're going to do it my way, or let me tell you why you should do it my way. And thank you for clarifying. I was in no way saying that we shouldn't have children's ministry or that we shouldn't be involved in the lives of our grandchildren. So thank you so much for clarifying. Did I address what you were saying?
I think so. You were saying that he should keep his mouth shut, and I keep my mouth shut when I'm in my kids' homes, but when my grandkids are in my home, or when kids that aren't even related to me are in my home, I don't keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you so much for clarifying that. I was addressing one tiny specific thing, which is discipline.
You're just talking about bothering children, mm-hmm. but I do think it's important to see there's a bigger picture, and I don't think God, I know there's an argument about whether the nuclear family is really the only place that things are supposed to happen, but I think there's a bigger picture in our Christian community, and I think I should not only learn from you how to father children, I mean, I'm learning from you maybe how to father grandchildren, but I should be fathering other children in a way, not really fathering, but what would you call it? Pastoring, mentoring, loving, I think is a good word to use that doesn't qualify me as maybe an unofficial uncle.
Yeah, I think all of those things are really good until you get to the word undermining. And when, for example, the parent would say X, and now if it's ungodly, we ought to obey God rather than man. But if it's just a philosophical thing, and you have a philosophical approach that you would take to your grandchildren, which would be different than your sons and daughters, and you know that that's different, and you intentionally undermine what they are doing, that's what I was saying that you shouldn't do. And forgive me if I use the phrase to keep your mouth shut. If I that's more of a New York phrase, and I shouldn't have used that terminology if I did. We should not undermine, but we certainly should, I wholeheartedly agree with you, extend love, pastor, shepherd, care for, teach, help with children that are not our own. And the church should be doing that. But the primary authority comes from the mother and the father. Thank you.
You described a level of hospitality in your. Sorry, my name's Sam. You described a level of hospitality in your home that I think a lot of us would aspire to, but maybe are intimidated by with people in your home all the time. So what are some practical ways just to get from almost never having people over in your home to where you guys are, the Moore household?
Yeah, and thank you for saying that. I wouldn't want you to be us, and especially if your wives are not so inclined. I've seen a lot of grief that has happened in homes because the husband has wanted to be very hospitable, and he would invite people over to the house, and he wouldn't even tell his wife that they were coming until the last minute. And don't do that. But I would say, number one, be in agreement with your wife about what can happen. Look to the scriptures. Let the scriptures be that which would guide you. Be careful to entertain strangers. For some, in so doing, have had angels come and visit them. Hebrews chapter 13 and 1 Peter 4:9. Show hospitality without grumbling. But I don't know what your house looks like. I don't even know if you live in a house. Maybe you live in an apartment, and maybe you live in a small apartment, and maybe you only have one bedroom, which such is the case with many of our members in our church. They only have one bedroom, and so I don't expect them to be housing missionary families when they come in. So what is your capacity? Hang on loosely to what you have, and it can start with inviting someone over for a meal. It can start even before that in church. If when you are in church and you see another human being that you don't know, you can walk up to that person and shake their hand and say, I'm really glad that you're here. This is one of, I guess, my biggest pet peeves in the church with respect to friendliness and hospitality. I will say to someone, there's a person over there and I think they're new, and they'll say, well, which person are you talking about? And I'll say, if you see a human being that you do not recognize, walk over to them and greet them. So one thing that you could do, a visitor comes to the church, and you could greet them. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you have a tiny one-bedroom apartment where you and your wife don't have that much space. You could say, hey, can we take you to lunch? I mean, that's a way that you can show hospitality, and that is a way that you can demonstrate hospitality to your children if you have children. I don't know your specific situation, but the extent to which you can do it, to whom much is given, much is required, and if God has given you a lot, then use that for the glory of God. If he's given you a little, use what little you have to show hospitality. The Shunammite woman, she doesn't have anything. She gets her husband to build a room on the top of a roof so that Elisha can have a place to sleep. She used what little she had to make a chamber for the prophet. Use whatever resources you have to show hospitality.
Pastor Ed, thank you again for sharing. I have a couple of questions. One is, how does one maintain the long view when you have a consistent prodigal? And could you define what is successful parenting?
Yeah, so I think the second one first. I think based upon my view of the doctrine of election and God's covenant relationship with his people, which he foreknew before time began, it is completely out of our control. So success does not mean that they have become born again. Success does not mean, because as I told you before, I've known some really bad parents who have children that really love the Lord, and I've seen some really good parents whose children became very, very rebellious. So ultimately, Jonah has it right when he says salvation is of the Lord. Successful parenting is being faithful. It's being faithful and leaving the results up to God. Now, could you define the first part of your question a little more when you talk about the prodigal who's been gone for a long time?
Well, I think what I was looking for is, how does one maintain in the long haul when you have prayed for your child and you're consistent in praying? How do you maintain your hope and your faith in the long haul when there is no change in your child's outlook? I'm talking about a child who has gone out of the home
for many years.
Many years. And yeah. How would you counsel the parent who has, for all intents and purposes, I'm sure at the end of the day we all say we are unprofitable servants, but yet
you
put in your life and yet you see the child consistently moving away, exactly the opposite of what you would want. And you see them running headlong into destruction.
Right.
And so how does one maintain in the long haul? I know you mentioned the sovereign purposes of God. And yet God is also a God who doesn't extinguish the burning wick or doesn't break a bruised reed. So talk to those parents who are looking, and maybe there is, in one sense, there is no change that they can discern. So that's what I was looking for. How does a parent continue to consistently love the child and also continue to support and faithfully do a parent, because you never stop being a parent?
Right. Yeah, what a wonderful question. I think one thing that would help is to look at cases where there have been prodigals who have gone away and have come home, and you take hope from that. I don't believe that you can claim your miracle from God, or you can say that, you know, because I am asking in faith, they are definitely going to come back. But I'll give you one story. It's not of a son, but it's of a husband. There was a woman in our church, a Jewish woman who got saved. She prayed for her husband for 30 years, 30 years consistently. She followed the Lord. He showed no interest whatsoever for three full decades. In 2008, out of nowhere, the Lord radically saved this man. He's one of our deacons now. He's one of our most faithful members and serves the Lord well. And we just, what we will do often when we speak to spouses who are married to people that are unsaved, or to people whose children are far away from the Lord, just look at this particular case. You might not be praying about this for 6 months or even 6 years or even 16 years. You might be in this for the long haul. And even this couple has unsaved children. And what we have to say to them is, Josie, remember, you prayed for your husband for 30 years before the Lord brought him in. God is sovereign and in his time, but we can be faithful to pray. Don't be ashamed of the gospel, because it's the power of God unto salvation. Have the disposition of the prodigal father, who, when, if there would be a motion in the direction of coming home or coming to Christ, you would be the one that would run to them and kiss them and hug them and kill the fatted calf upon their return, and that they would not have to earn any kind of a return to you. But short answer is, it's in the hands of God. And so ultimately, you know, whether they are, you know, really good moral kids who are living in our home, or whether they have gone into a far-off country, salvation is of the Lord, and we are beginning to end at his mercy. No, thank you.
Hi, my name is Bear. So my question is in regards to parenting advice for my sister. She's in a really unique situation. So they live in San Diego. My great-great-grandparents bought a string of townhome properties that over the years all my family kind of moved into, and they all live there, and it's a real big blessing. And I believe all my family members that live there are believers. But my sister lives like right next door to my mom. And though I believe my family members and my mom are believers, they weren't raised with a whole lot of like wisdom and guidance in how to parent. And so the style of parenting that me and my sister experienced, what I wouldn't say was of the highest quality. There's a lot of things that I think she learned and I learned to not be like, rather than here is what you should do. But with that, she has a tendency to obstruct a lot of the things that my sister and brother-in-law are trying to build in homeschooling their kids that live right next door. And there's a lot of tension there. And so my question would be, what advice would you give to my sister in trying to have a posture of grace and love towards my mom in her good intentions, but also kind of like what would you, how would you establish boundaries like in that sort of context?
I cannot tell you the number of times we've run into this. This is so common. Here's what I have always done, and this is not knowing the people or knowing the circumstances, but what I would suggest is that both parents, in an unhurried situation, would sit down with your mother and say to her, first of all, we want you to know that we love you. Secondly, we want you to know that we respect you. Third, we want you to know that we are very thankful for you, and to have illustrations of what they are thankful for and how they love your mother, and the tone that they would use would be very respectful. And then I would insert the word but we know that you mean the best, and so we are not accusing you of any ill will toward our children. And we know that we are in close proximity to one another, so what we are about to say makes it a little bit more challenging. But we would very respectfully ask that in matters which concern our children, that you would please allow us to be the decision makers and to set the priorities for how we are going to raise our family. And we're not saying that to you in a brash way. We're not saying that to you so as to hurt you. And we could see how what we are saying might be offensive to you. But we are asking you, please, to back off and to allow us to raise our own children. And we are still going to have great times together. And we're still going to have meals together. And we're still going to have parties together. And we're still going to just basically hang out with one another and do life together. But when it comes to decisions for our children, we're going to ask you, please, please to back off. I don't know your mother. I don't know how she would take that. But we've had to do that times without number. In the same way that you would not allow your children to be babysat by a woman who you hired, who lived across town, who lost her temper and who screamed at your kids, I don't think it really matters that it is your mother that is the babysitter. You know, Mom, I want to say this respectfully, but if when you are around our children and you scream at them, we're just going to have to find another babysitter. Now, I mean, no offense, but we just can't continue to do that. So I think in a very loving way, she needs to be confronted if indeed the actions that she is taking are sinful, regardless of whether or not she's the grandmother. Thank you.
Terry, in thinking about just the commendation that you gave us to recognize the preciousness of the time that we have with our kids. I mean, I really appreciated that. And then the illustration you gave, it's what strikes me is that there's a dependency there that we're taking to heart, that our children are still in a state of dependency on us, and they need us, and we want to invest in them and take advantage of that dependency, especially, as you said, when they're soft and pliable. At the same time, how would you counsel me? Because the position I'm in is I feel this tension of wanting to value that dependency while also building independence in my son and teaching him to be able to do things on his own and to develop skills where he doesn't have to have me do those things for him all the time, that he can have some strength. And is how do you balance those two things, especially in a kind of, as your child's growing into getting closer and closer to being a teenager?
Yeah, I think that would have been a problem if I took my son to Cooperstown when he was 23 and he said, hey, Dad, you know, can we get the same bed? And I think Paul says it when he says, when I was a child, I thought as a child, but we always were trying to push our kids and extend our kids beyond their comfort level with respect to ministry or athletics or anything else, independence, teaching them things. I think that you can very neatly have both, that you are tight with them, that you are close with them, and you are training them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, preparing to kick them out. So conversations all the time. My children are very small. We're walking along. I see a group of unruly teenagers. I lean over. I whisper in their ear, and I say, okay, in just a few years, you are going to be that age. Do you see the way that they are acting disrespectfully? Do you see the way that they are cursing or whatever they're doing? Look at that. Notice that. Don't do that. When you get there, that is a good example. These teenagers have helped you tonight. Now, don't do that. So you're always having conversations with them, getting ready to kick them out. And so my kids were married at 19, 21, and 19. I have a daughter that's 20 right now, and we're getting nervous because she hasn't found anybody yet. So we tried from early on to get, and you want to get rid of your kids for financial reasons. You want to move them along. You can keep them close and also be kicking them out at the same time.
So in essence, you know, to draw on what you said last night, constantly encourage them, but also send them Rocky.
Right.
Watch right. This movie.
Yeah, watch this movie. Yeah. Good.
Hi, my name is Andrew. I just wanted to
question.
Where's Andrew?
Andrew's right here. This is the last question.
Sorry. Obviously, the Bible is our primary biblical teaching resource, but I wondered if you could share a couple of your other favorite ones for a couple different age ranges that we can engage with our children collaboratively, kind of to be teaching biblical principles.
Yeah, I don't think that the Tripp brothers have a corner on the market, but I think they have the best resources that I have seen. Pastor, what would you say? What would you recommend beyond that?
So, I think probably the single best book on the parenting was the one that Trey gave out. Parenting that I think you got. Yeah, here, let's just hold it up. This one here. So I know Shepherding a Child's Heart was a big one for many years. I actually prefer this. I think this is stronger. I think it's clear on grace. One of the concerns I occasionally had about Shepherding a Child's Heart was they had to have them obey right away, all the way, and with a happy heart. And mm-hmm. there could be an element, if you're not careful, of creating Pharisees by requiring them to have a happy heart and obedience. I don't have a happy heart following Jesus sometimes. You know,
good
so,
point.
Yeah, and so I think there are some good ways in which that book is stronger. You know, on the book stall, we've got sort of children's books for young ages, you know, up through here. Don't Make Me Count to Three. That was yours. Like, just tell them once, tell them conversationally. If they don't obey, like, okay, you just bring them aside. Don't Make Me Count to Three was wonderful for us on that regard, you know, in those years. So, but I think if on the book stall, you've got sort of age-ranged resources that have been selected that are largely our recommendations during that season of life.
The best stuff that I've gotten was not in a book, and it wasn't from personal experience. The most I have learned about being a good parent is from Brian Davis. And he did a session, Parenting in Word and Parenting in Deed. And if you go to the Ocean City Bible Conference, it's ocbibleconference.org, and I believe that it is 2018, Messages from 2018, a breakout message by Brian Davis, Parenting in Word, Parenting in Deed. It is the best stuff that I've ever heard. Like, I should not have done this speech today. He should have been the one to have done that. It is the best stuff that I've ever heard. It should be published. Yeah.
Excellent.
Is that it?
All right, that's it. Thanks, okay. Ed.
One last statement.
Okay. Question. Last statement.
Ed, you did a masterful job of convincing us not to watch a football game.
Round of applause for that. Awesome. Thanks, Ed.